Hello, everyone. My name is Doug Woodard, executive coach with Advisor Game Plan. Welcome to the Thriving Sports Podcast, our public podcast available to everyone. We do have two podcasts. Number one is a client-only private podcast called Thriving Coaches. And number two is this public podcast available to everyone. In this public podcast, in each episode, we'll be talking to a successful coach or leader about specific ways they enhance their team's culture and player development, as well as many other valuable topics.
And I'm Brian Willett, founder and CEO of Advisor Game Plan. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to sit back and learn from each of these episodes with these amazing coaches. Thank you for joining us as we dive deeper into these areas that can lift a team from average to good to great.
Hello, everybody. Very fortunate to be joined today by Coach Joel Heizer. Coach Heizer played at and is a UNK grad, coming on the heels of two Hastings College grads. Any comment there, Coach?
Those were some really incredible rivalries, really, back in the day. So we could talk about the Lopers and Broncos another time, but they're definitely great memories.
That's a long subject, and I'm sure the Lopers have a different view than the Broncos do of that. Began his coaching career, I believe, at the varsity and junior high level at Mankato High School in Kansas. Eventually was a head coach out at McCook, and then in 2003, which is hard to believe it's been that long, but was hired as a head coach at Papio South. His wonderful wife, Lisa, and he have three boys, Cy, Jalen, and Jace, all grown. I imagine also hard for you to believe, following their own life paths at this point. His favorite verse or motto, I believe, is iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Well, my friend, you have sharpened this dull vessel in many ways over the years. So great to have you with us. Talk a little bit quick before we get into the basketball stuff about how everybody in the family's doing.
Oh, they're doing great. You know, my middle son, Jalen, just got hired as the head coach at Fremont High School. So we're really, you know, excited about that opportunity for him. His older brother still works at Boys Town, and the younger one, Jace, is out at New York, works at a design company. So, yeah, they're growing up and five grandchildren, so that phase of life has definitely been wonderful.
Yeah, and that five already, we're fortunate to have 13, and that is a real blessed time, and I'm sure you're in the middle of understanding that at this point. Well, thanks for coming in and maybe give just a little intro on your squad as you're looking at it for next year. Who's back? District finalist squad. I know that you had a very disappointing loss, which we've all dealt with, obviously, throughout our careers in that district final game at North. But just talk a little bit about what you're looking at for next year's team and what you may be focusing on or trying to get those fellows to focus on this summer.
Well, I really hope that, you know, because of the hardship that we went through there late, you know, anytime you lose games that you are, especially when you got a good lead and things get away, it's hard. And there's just so many good things on the other side of hard. I think that we have to, though at the time you have to kind of pacify your little self about, you know, how that loss happened. But when you're able to kind of finally move on, you know that you can become stronger from it. Hopefully that's what's happened with this team, because so many of those guys are back, and we look to be a strong team behind, you know, the leadership of a couple guys that have been playing, you know, and starting lineups for us since our freshman year, and that's, you know, Bryson Ball and Reese Kircher. So those guys have done a great job of kind of forging us through the fire since, you know, the end of the season, and we're now trying to really put a lot into our summer. You know, if there's anything we're probably trying to emphasize, it's you know, in our training, as we continue to build habits, we just want to be a lot more consistent, and we want to do it with greater intensity. And hopefully those are some things that can take us to that next level where we can just have, you know, throughout the game, throughout the practices, throughout the entire season, just more consistency.
That's good stuff. And obviously, I know you know you build that with consistent habits in the off season, and that's a special time right now. Do you find the summer to be a time that you're able maybe to build more of a solid relationship with kids because there's not that next game coming? I mean, there is, but it's summer league, and I think we all look at that in somewhat of a different light, obviously, than the regular season. But do you think it's a time to build more of a solid relationship with kids?
It's certainly a time that you just enjoy summer. I mean, it's, you know, you don't have the bell-to-bell schedule, and you're able to do some things that are sometimes a little bit on a lighter note. But also, I think the push is to develop skill. I know during the season you shouldn't fear failure either, but I think in the summer you're able to fail with not quite as much trepidation, and as a result, usually you're able to fail forward. And anytime you can fail forward and grow from, you know, trying new things, playing, training, competing out of your comfort zone, there's just a lot to that. And I think that's a big part of, you know, the maturation process and these young men hopefully becoming not only great basketball players, but just people that are very, you know, productive as whether they're husbands or, you know, working in the job force or just community member. You know, those are the things that we're hoping to obviously kind of transform in through the game itself.
You bet. Coach, one of the things that obviously has always impressed me anyway about your team is, from an offensive perspective, is their spacing, their movement, their footwork, those types of, you mentioned skill a little bit, but those principles, can you talk for a minute about those basic principles that you do instill and that lead to such year after year, whether you got, you know, like you have now some very, very talented kids or you don't have as much quite talent, those things have always been present. And so what principles do you instill that lead to such good specific team skills as those?
Yeah, I guess before this gets away, you know, one, I just have to acknowledge, you know, kind of the environment I was raised and grew up in. And that's, you know, my dad being the coach at UNK and then kind of the influences through his tenure there. And then, of course, you know, the people that have kind of I've considered as mentors besides my dad and, you know, Tom Kropp and Coach Meyer, you know, players like that, but or coaches like that. But then since just the time I've had at Papillion South, two of my assistants have been with me the entire time. I get chills even right now thinking.
That's incredible.
Jim Simpson, our head JV coach, has been with us all 21 years. Joseph Cooley came his second year, so I fibbed a little bit. It's 20 years for him.
He doesn't even look like.
Yeah, I know, 20. I know. I still think of him as a kid, but he's a wise soul. With you know, I guess with that said, I just, you know, there's a steadfastness in having great people around you. And I think that the same can be said of the game itself. If you can just develop a firm foundation as a player, you're so much better off. And if, as a person, you know, you can surround yourself with great people, you're just that much better off. And so I think the two kind of parallel itself a little bit. And, you know, so getting back to the game, I'm just very lucky to have been, you know, coached by a father who loves basketball, and then to have great coaches that are alongside me right now. And I think it's, you know, a firm foundation in the fundamentals first and foremost. And then the game is just beautiful. I just love the game. And, you know, I don't want to ramble on here, but when it comes to, you know, the offensive side of the ball. If we can just play in big space, and you know, the defense is then countering that by trying to take away your space. That's the yin and yang of the game, and that's what makes it so fun and
which
and beautiful.
One's the yang?
Well, don't even ask me what yin and yang means, but it just sounded like the right words to say here. But you know, our emphasis is on big spacing, and then you know, trying to utilize that to find some openings, you know, get into it and play off of that. And so you mentioned footwork. Probably, you know, I kind of stumbled upon this last summer. You know, I love the game because it's always like you're kind of just chasing for that. What's that next thing you can do to just make your team a little better, make yourself a little wiser? And, you know, forever, you know, I talked a little bit about those influences of my father and Coach Meyer, footwork fundamentals. But, and, you know, and then it came into the, you know, a decade or so where Jay Wright and his, you know, getting to the rim, playing off a two, all that stuff was so good, so good. And then just last summer, I don't know if you've ever heard of Coach Doug Novak. Yeah. I stumbled upon his, what he calls finishing school, and just the emphasis of playing off of a stride stop. And that was really, it was new for me. I've grown up as a, you know, 2 feet, you know, and then make your move from there. The stride stop stuff I found really intriguing, and we've really poured into that, in particular the guys right now that are kind of making their strong run through our varsity level, and really felt like it was a difference maker last year in our ability to get to the rim a little better, draw some fouls, get to the free throw line. We've not been great at that over the years, and that's paid off for us. So there's a lot that I just said there, and I don't know how we want to wrap it up, but I just think that the game itself, I'm always like, what's the next trend going to be? I remember when I would ask you, I remember a few years ago, I'm like, you know, why don't you press like you used to the other, you know, and you, back in your days where you just all over the place, and then you always had a thoughtful, you know, reason why you maybe are trending in a different way. And I'm always like, what is the next trend? You know, I'm always asking like Coach Cooley or Coach Simpson, what do you think the next trend? It usually trickles down from the top. Maybe lately it kind of comes over from, you know, from even, you know, Europe, things like that. But I'm always like, what's the next trend of the game? And that's what makes it so fun and just so challenging. It's what's probably keeps me in it.
Well, and you talked about that stride stop. It does. It gives you now. I think kids should be able to obviously do both.
And, yeah, I do too. I do too.
But that stride stop, it does give you a player, especially if once they've effected the stride stop, they're able to either finish right away or pivot back again, and they put the defense in a real bind in those situations. If a kid is maybe good with both hands, he's good off of a reverse or a front pivot, either one, and there's so many things you can do off of that. And you see, again, a lot of that came from international again. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned seeing, you know, the Zoom actions, they're all coming. Mm-hmm. That came from overseas, and you see a lot of teams running the Zoom stuff, and it is. That's one of the things that's just it's just fun to do as a coach, is to experiment. Could I use this to make, you know, my group of kids better and more effective?
Yeah, I was just listening. I know the podcast is a little bit dated, but I was just listening to Sundance Wick's talk on a Slap and Glass podcast, and I found it interesting. He was talking about, because we were talking about spacing earlier, your question to me, and you know, he's a product of Don Meyer, and he was saying how the game now is not as much about ball movement and player movement, which I don't 100% agree with, but that's what he said. And it's more about just creating, you know, advantages and mismatches, and I get it. At the higher level, there's probably a lot more truth to that.
That's an NBA.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe not so much at you know, youth or even high school. I think there's beauty though in a team that can space, that can move the ball, they can move themselves, and they can do it, you know, in a way that is selfless.
Right.
And that's the hard part of the game in this day and age, where it's becoming so individual and so selfish in right. some regards, in terms of just, you know, social media branding,
look
this
at
and
me.
That and all this stuff. So that's the fight. That's the culture fight every day as a coach. We have to try to instill in our players, and that comes from hopefully living a life that reflects that too.
You bet. Now, Coach, you talked about, you know, we mentioned concepts, spacing, movement, footwork. So how important do you think those things are, especially for youth players, high school players, relative to learning a set pattern or a group of set plays? I think I know the answer, but just talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a few Hy-Vee breakfasts over this stuff. This is good. Youth coaches, high school coaches, boy, we need to teach kids how to play and not how to run plays.
Absolutely.
And that's the gold. If you can teach, especially as they're growing into the game, because if you're teaching plays, I just think there comes a certain point in their life that's a shelf life, and it could be out as soon as 7th, 8th grade if it's all about just running plays. But when they learn how to play, then they fall in love with the game. And when you fall in love with something, there's not many walls that can keep you from going through. But if you're just doing something to maybe please somebody else, or you're just told that it's the right thing to do and there's not just a passion within you, then it's pretty easy to kind of, I don't want to use the word burnout, but because that sounds maybe a little bit old school trend, but I think there's a shelf life. And when you love something, though, you know, even when maybe you're not always winning, or, you know, everything's not circumstantially aren't working out for you, you lose tough games in districts, things like that, you keep going, because it's not about necessarily. It's about what you love to do and who you're doing it with.
It is. And, you know, from a coaching perspective, the hurdle is, and I think we've talked about this a little bit too, is that it's so much more difficult and risky to teach young athletes how to play the game. It takes longer. It's messier. It's not going to look as good as dictating four or five set plays that feature your best player in a fifth grade setting all the time, doing what that fifth grader is good at, and everybody else kind of setting the screens or doing whatever it is to get him to that place of being able to, quote, dominate the game. And it gives that coach a better chance to win. And so I think as head coaches and leaders, we have to do everything we can to let our youth coaches know you're not going to be judged on how many games you win in the sixth grade, but how are the kids developing as players. And that will give some freedom, I think, in those coaches, because it is a more risky proposition.
It is, and that is that's so encouraging to hear, you know, you say, and for that to come off of a platform like this, because – you know, for every one of us that say it, there's going to be nine others that are on the other side of this, and they're hoping to, you know, go undefeated through that third grade season and to press the entire game and fall back into that trapping zone, and just, you know, a lot of things that really don't benefit a player. You know, the biggest thing you can do as a youth coach, as a middle school coach, high school coach, is to one, develop the person, and then to develop, you know, the player and
a
player
passion for
yeah him. that development is going to come through, you know, the things that you're alluding to right now, and it's but yet it's so hard to convince them of that, because you know, a lot of times we are judged for the moment, but we want to be transformal and not just transactional, that's for sure.
Well, and one of the things retiring my daughter talked me into working with her and coaching last year, second grade. So we'll be coaching third grade next year. And so I get to walk this out, and it is frustrating, mm-hmm. especially when you've coached high school and now you're dealing with young kids that really don't have any concept of the even the basic fundamentals, but to get them to understand and begin to understand why spacing's important, why footwork's important, those kind of things, to watch the light go off, even in a small way, is really a lot of fun. And I feel good about the fact that I'm in that position now, and I'm not just talking from the lofty perch of a high school coach or whatever, but as someone who now has to get down in the weeds and actually do that. But it is so much more productive long-term for the athletes to work on those concepts rather than to teach them to be a robot.
Yeah, I've often, a lot of times when I share this with my own team and coaches and camp settings, that type of thing, a lot of times I kind of compare it to like learning how to read. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be something you got to build and you got to practice and you got to, you know, spend a lot of time just immersing yourself in. And I don't know if there's ever, you know, I can't remember back when I was like, oh, I can now read. But same thing with as a basketball player. I don't know exactly, you know, what the formula is for when you can all of a sudden, you know, be a player. But you when it happens, you can see that person. I mean, you can see. You don't, as a coach, you can go watch a player play. He may go, you know, 1 for 6 from the field, but you know if he can play.
Right.
You know if he has a feel for the game. And I think that these are the things that do get lost in the kind of the chaos of youth sports.
They absolutely do, and it's just absolutely critical, I think, that we keep those of us that have been in the game for a while and have had the responsibility to kind of have a program-wide impact and direction to keep those things first and foremost to coaches, development, improvement, love for the game, not winning and losing. And that kind of leads right into, Coach, to one of the things I've always over the years been so impressed with Titan teams has been just team enthusiasm. And we're going to define enthusiasm here as great excitement and passion for continued improvement. It's not just jumping up and clap, but it's that excitement, a passion to get better. Your players improve. They really seem to grow in their game year over year. How have you maintained an enthusiastic approach to craft improvement for yourself? And then how can young coaches cultivate that trait in themselves as well as their team?
Wow, and that's a, you know, that's a great question. I wish I knew the answer to it. But I alluded to it earlier. My father, being a college coach, did an incredible job of letting me fall in love with the game. And he could have easily been one that really tried to govern everything about me, my schedule, how I go about going to work out. You know, I don't ever remember him saying, hey, you need to go out and get your shots up. Never. But yet he allowed me to be around his teams, his players, and to just see, you know, what experiencing this game can be like when you do it together. And so one, I fell in love with the game. And so, you know, to me, enthusiasm is just that. It's passion for what you do and who you do it with. I think we always have to ask ourselves, if you're going to get into coaching, one, what is your why? Why are you doing this? Is it just to win games? If it is, you know, your career might not be that long. But if it's, you know, to impact lives, to have a a relationship, with your players, then I think that there's some really, really deep forged bonding that can happen. And as a result, like I said, I think we're able to do things we've never thought we could do on the other side.
Absolutely.
Of hard. So in terms of that, you know, how does that happen within your own team? I think one, do you motivate out of fear, or do you motivate out of love? Again, I'm not going to get into the specifics of that, but hopefully a majority of what you do is motivating out of love. Now, so we're at that point where when a player knows, you know, how much you care for them, and that you're able to conduct yourself in a way that's going to hold them accountable. It doesn't mean we're just buddy-buddy with them. It just means we care for them, and we're willing to, you know, hold them accountable and to, you know, work hard for them. Those are all, I think, things that it takes time. It takes a lot of time, and trust has to be built. But in the long run, if you fight for that culture, and if you're one that kind of lives it out, I think that it's ultimately going to get you through the hard times, and it's going to then make the good times even that much more deeper and richer.
Well, and you talked about hard times and good times, and one of the things I found, and I, you know, we're all different, and everybody's got different ways of handling things, but something I tried to decide early, I thought that was critical to maintain a passion and love, was to have a short memory, and mm-hmm. I guess by that, I mean, you know, after a season where maybe there was great failure, I'll take success first. After a season where there was a lot of really good success, I thought it was important to, as much as possible, 24 hours, and then have the humility to see that improvement still needed in yourself and in your team, and so start forging for that next season. And after a season of great failure, obviously you're already humbled because you had, which this game does to everybody. But maintain after 24 hours, maintain confidence that you are an effective coach, and 24 hours, move on. And then if it was kind of a mediocre season, have the aspiration after 24 hours that, no, we can aspire to something better than mediocre. I just felt it was important to have that short memory and not dwell on great success or dwell on great failure or get mired down in what the world would see as mediocre. But just look ahead and look for, because we owe it to that next group of kids.
No doubt. We often will remind our players that you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are. You know, it's usually, you know, there, that humility you talk about is kind of knowing who you are. It's usually kind of right there in the middle. And I think that's the art of life, isn't it? Just balancing out who you are. And when you're able to kind of get a little footing on that, you're able to maybe, you know, endure things a little bit more so than the next person. And this is definitely the great, beautiful thing about, you know, coaching kids at that age.
It absolutely is. And, Coach, I appreciate you coming in today. More than that, appreciate the friendship over the years. Hopefully today was another example of sharpening whatever stage this elderly individual's at, but I so enjoy it, and we got to get out and get another one of those Hy-Vee breakfasts.
We do, and we can talk about old Crusader stories.
There's a lot of those. Thanks again.
Thank you, Coach.
We have free resources available on advisorgameplan.com. If you would like to gain access to our full version of client resources, please contact us today on advisorgameplan.com to explore becoming a client. Also, subscribe today to Thriving Sports, and stay up to date with future episodes and more interviews with more coaches. Together, let's be thriving coaches that put the player first in all situations. See ya!